now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, Shannon Kay from Fresno. And whatever happens, she says pray. Hi.
Very nice of you. I'm a little nervous, but, you know, giving all those hugs, oh my gosh, that just calmed me right down. I love that. Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me okay? Okay. I'm just going to share my experience, strength, and hope. Just get right to it. My sobriety date is October 27th, 1991, so I'll be 24, God willing. Next Tuesday. I started drinking at 15. I moved out of my father's home. My parents are divorced, and I moved into my mother's home. And over there, it just happened to be where you could do whatever you want, and you didn't have any parental supervision. So that worked really good for me. And I started a high school in a little town, and I actually moved there because I met a future cousin, if my mom married the guy she lived with, who, she was wonderful. She was like the sister I never had, and we had this really strong bond, and she pretty much talked me into, like, she was like, why don't you move in with your mom? And I was like, oh yeah, because, you know, it's really hard at my dad's house. He doesn't let me do anything, and he doesn't love me, and so anyway, so I moved there, and it was great. I mean, I just remember being in my room, and, you know, and I had started smoking in high school, you know, a cigarette here or there, and I was like, you know, my mom goes, do you need anything at the store? And I said, yeah, a pack of Marlboro Reds, and she just laughed, right, and then came back and threw me a pack, and it was like, God, I love it here, and, you know, that's pretty much how it was, you know, and then it was like, Mom, I'm going to a party on this weekend, you know, and she was like, oh, who are you going with? Okay, you know, be back tonight. So, you know, and I was. And that's how I got to my first kegger party out in the middle of the woods. I lived in Amador County, if you know where that is, 3 hours northeast. And, you know, it was at someone's house, and they had a keg, and I had never dated or anything, and I'm out on this date, and, you know, and he gives me a red cup, you know, and it was like, and, you know, it was like, okay, go over to that keg. So, you know, and I want to be, you know, sophisticated and, you know, accepted by all these, you know, strangers. And so I'm drinking that first beer, and I was like, oh, God. And then it was finally done. And then it was like the second one, third. And, you know, I just drank that way until I was dry heaving in the back of the house, and this date was with me, and it was just like, you know, I was pretty disgusting right off the bat. And you know what, but I had such a good time. You know, what I liked is, you know, because as I'm drinking, I'm looking around at this party, and everyone looked better and better, and I felt better and better, and except for the back of the house part. But you know what, it was just like, okay, this is what you do, you're growing up, and, you know, you get drunk at parties. And then I thought, you know what, I probably should have ate a little bit more, you know, that way I probably wouldn't have dry heaved, and, you know, I would have been able to hold my liquor. And so, I mean, and from that moment on, I pretty much had, what do you call it, a total personality change, because I'd always been kind of quiet and kind of cared about my grades and kind of cared about what my, you know, dad had to say to me, you know, don't want to make him mad. And after I was introduced myself to alcohol, I pretty much wanted to figure out how to get out of school. And what I learned how had to do is I started off on the right foot. I started writing my own notes. So they only recognized my writing. You know, and so it's like, I'm sorry, Shannon's got a doctor appointment. Sorry, Shannon's got a dentist appointment. Sorry, Shannon's got to go. You know, I always had all these reasons, all these notes. And that was my big priority, because what I wanted to do is I wanted to go out to the river. I wanted to go to other houses. And, you know, and then I got introduced to, well, no, I didn't get introduced. It would be like, I'd watch someone take something. I'd say, what is that? Can I have some? And it would be like, oh, cross tops. Oh, pink hearts. Oh, you know, whatever. Oh, powdered mushrooms. Okay. You know, drink. And so it would be, I'd pretty much do whatever came my way, because I just wanted to, I'd love that I didn't have to do anything. All I had to do is put something in my body, and I became this person that I always wanted to be. It was like, you know, funny and could laugh, and I could just unwind, you know, and I loved that. But there was a downside to that, because I found out pretty quick I would pass out, you know. And I think that's probably what prompted me to ask for some speed, anything to keep me up and not throw up. And so that's kind of the kind of alcoholic I am. I like beer. I don't like fancy drinks. I throw up on them pretty quick. It's like poison to me. And my system apparently just likes beer. And a lot of it, if I have enough speed. I could just go all night. But so that's what I pretty much did all through my high school years, is the school I had been was a lot more advanced. So when I went to this country school, I really didn't learn anything. I already learned it all in junior high school. And high school at this place, you know, is a little behind. So I didn't feel like they had anything to teach me. I already knew it all. And so that's, you know, I concentrated on growing up. I wanted to grow up. I was looking all my life for, you know, the one. And I'd always find it in this guy, and then, no, that guy is more attractive, but that guy, you know. So I had a lot of boyfriends. I had a lot of boyfriends in high school. Well, I slept around a lot. I didn't really have boyfriends. I had encounters. And I'm so embarrassed. I'd be so ashamed of that, you know, because then if everyone in high school knew that too. And then my friend, who was going to be my cousin one day when my mom married her uncle, you know, she'd look at me, you know, and go, gosh, and you know what people are saying about you? And it's like, what do you mean? You know, how dare, you know, don't listen to them. And then pretty soon she was like, gotcha, I can't hang around you. You know, I mean, people think birds of a feather, you know, and if you're doing this crazy ass shit and, you know, you're making me look bad. I was making her look bad, essentially, is what I heard. And what she didn't say, but what I heard was, I don't like you anymore. I don't want to be your friend. I don't want anything to do with you. And so I was just like, but that wasn't what she was saying. She was worried about me. She was seeing that I'm going off the deep end, and she knew that wasn't who she met, you know. And so we were no longer friends. We still were nice to each other, but I didn't hang out with her anymore. I didn't go to parties with her anymore. I found a new group of people, and they were, you know, they were exciting. They were usually older. I always liked the seniors when I was a freshman, because they were a lot more exciting. They were a lot more exciting. They had homes, they had cars, they had lots of drugs, and, you know, I mean, that's pretty much, that was what looked really attractive to me. And so that was my high school year, my high school time, and I barely graduated by the skin of my teeth. I had to go to night school the same night I graduated, or something like that. It was really, like, close. And that was good enough for me, you know, because I'm not going to do anything with that diploma. I'm going to find the right man. And I lived in kind of a fantasy, because my ideal, like, ambition was to be a mother, not like my mom. I was going to do everything opposite my mom did. And I was going to be this great mother and this beautiful wife. And they were going to, you just adore me. And, you know, and I really thought I knew how to make that happen. And so I moved in with a guy. When I was eight, well, no, I didn't move in. My mom kicked me out. She was like, as soon as you're 18 and I'm no longer, you're no longer my responsibility, you are out. Because I pretty much, you know, I wasn't a very good daughter. I hated my mom. My mom was alcoholic, and I really treated, I never said I hate you, Mom, but everything in my behavior said I hate you, Mom, because I was ashamed of her. She, you know, her, I didn't know she's alcoholic, and her, she progressed into a really non-functioning, embarrassing, you know, I mean, a typical example. We'd go to the store, and my mom, you know, we get out of the truck, and my mom, to leave, you know, she'd have to open up the lid and get this block of wood, and I don't know what she'd do. She'd hit something in the engine to make it run, and I had to turn the key or something. And, you know, it was just, I just felt like such a hillbilly, you know. It was like, God, you're ruining my reputation, you know. That's such a good one. And, you know, but it was like stuff like that. I was just really ashamed of who I was and who she was. And, you know, and so anyway, I guess I treated her pretty poorly. And so to the point where she was like, your ass is out of here at 18. But she let me stay until June, until I graduated. But so I moved in with the guy, and it was great. You know, this was the one that was going to be my husband eventually. We never did get married, but I thought we were going to. And, you know, and what it turned out to be is he couldn't keep a job. I found a job that allowed me to party my ass off every single, you know, as often as I could. Not every single night. I would have loved that, but as often as I could. And, you know, my little, and I could party and, you know, keep the job. That was my goal. Have a job that I can party my ass off and get money and continue having a good time. Because to me, that was the only way I knew how to fun. You know, I didn't have any hobbies. I didn't do really anything but party. You know, that was my entertainment. And fantasize about the future, you know. Although the present was always very scary. It was like, people scared me. Family gatherings scared me. Pretty much anything scared me, unless I had alcohol. And then I could be anything, anywhere, as long as it was okay to be drunk. There was places that I wasn't allowed to be drunk, and so I'd always find a reason not to go. Like, to my dad's house for Thanksgiving, it would be like, I got a flat tire. Because I lived far enough away, you know. And, oh, I don't have money for gas. It was really hard taking care of myself, and it's all me. And I, you know, I was also a victim. A real, like, everything was for me. I can't do all the things that other people can do because I'm disadvantaged. You know, but what it was is every cent I had, because I was a good worker, you know, I always showed up to work, and all that money would go into my party fund. I paid the bills, like, you know, I was responsible, but, you know, the major part, oh, and so what I would take is the food bill. The food money that I would buy, I would do drugs, or, you know, alcohol, drugs. For me, everything was in a big, I mean, alcohol, drugs, men, cigarettes, they all went together for me. If I did one, I had to do all of them. I could not do just one. And, you know, and that's expensive. That's really expensive. All those things that, you know, and those are just necessaries. And, I don't know. I lived with this guy for, I was about 22, and, you know, the dream started getting to be where, well, when are we ever going to get married? Are we going to have kids? And he's like, yeah, go ahead, have kids. You know, it's like, you know, it wasn't my plan. I was like, you know, I want to get married and then I'll have kids, you know, because you're going to help me with them. I was selfish. It was like, I don't raise any kids. I'm not going to do it all myself. Pay for you and then pay for yours, you know. Kids. And so, you know, it started getting a little, and then I started getting tired, you know. I was tired going to work. I'd you know, complain to my coworkers. I guess I probably complained a lot, because I just remember one of my friends who actually got me the job, she was just like, God, just go home. You're so tired. You're so mean. She's like, leave. And I was like, I think I will. I don't feel very good. You know? And so then I started doing that thing of not being able to make it to work. And, you know, because I came home from work and there's all these people at my house. And, you know, all the chick is, here, Shannon, have a beer. Oh, wow. Hey, you got any Coke? And, you know, and then I'm on the whole, what I would do is say, okay, I'm just going to stop at noon or at midnight and get a decent night rest and wake up refreshed and go to work. You know, but that never happened. You know, it'd be like 1 o'clock and I'd be going, oh, I should probably think about going to bed right now. And then 2 o'clock, and then, you know, I tried to lay down by 4 o'clock. It was like, man, if you don't go to bed now, you're going to have to call and make up one more excuse, you know, and I was running out of them. And so it'd be 4 o'clock, it'd start getting light, and I could start hearing the birds, and it'd be like, you know, I would just psych myself up. You know, breathe deep, you know, I would like, you know, try to snap myself out of it and shower, and I'm young, I'm only 22, you know, I'm in my 20s, and I could like, you know, like snap out of it, you know, do my hair, look in the mirror, and, you know, put the Visine in, and just try to get the, because I'd be like this, on the inside, like, oh God, I can't. You know, and my reaction time was slow, and, you know, I'd be driving to work, and, you know, and I can't eat yet, you know, and I'm hungry, and a little hypoglycemic, and, you know, and that just started wearing on me. You know, it was like, man, I feel 52, I'm only 22, and, my dad, out of nowhere, my dad stopped talking to me when I moved in with someone, you know, because he was old school, you know, you get married, you have, the man takes care of you. And, you know, and I'm like, I always disappointed him, you know, so I just kind of never saw him, you know, and then tell him the phone, yeah, it's great, I'm wonderful, yeah, we're going to get married. But actually, I didn't say that, because he stopped talking to me when I moved in with this boyfriend. And so out of the blue, he just calls me and says, you know, hon, you know, if you ever want to do anything with your life, you know, if you ever want to go back to school, or, and I was like, no sooner, I hung up, I mean, I'm at his house, right, all my stuff, and, you know, I'm like, God, yes, I want to do something new. And that was my first geographic, because I thought, shit, man, if I just leave all that behind, because I would try to stop doing, you know, my lifestyle, but, you know, my lifestyle kept coming over to my house, and so I just went, you know, if I get a different place, and I don't know anybody, and, you know, I'll go to school, I'll take care of myself, I don't need no guy, you know, I'll find a different guy, and one that'll marry me. And so I moved, and I went to college, and I moved in with my dad and stepmom, who, my stepmom is the most amazing, she was the first woman I ever met in my life that was, and it always chokes me up, because she was kind to me, and honest, and helpful, and it was like, I don't remember ever having a woman in my life like that, like her. And I think she really had a lot to do with my dad calling me, because, you know, I think she worked on him. And thank God. And so I went to school. You know, I was doing really good. And my dad got me a job at Kentucky Fried Chicken with this lady that her husband worked with my dad. So that's my in. And so, you know, I was working at Kentucky Fried Chicken, going to school. I had a babysitting job, and I also worked as a cocktail waitress at a bowling alley. So I was very busy. I was really working at that, like, change my life thing. And so what did I do? Oh, I screwed it up. I started partying with my boss, who turns out actually my connection too. So I would go out with her and her husband, and they'd set me up with these weird guys, you know, and I'd be like, really, Lori, you think I'd be interested in him? You know, I was like, no, I'll go find my own future husband. So, you know, so I got my I went to beauty school also, and I got my license, and you know, that was kind of my biggest dream. That was the biggest dream I had. And I partied, but I kind of kept it together a little bit, because I just thought, you know what? I can have my own career and get stuff going, and that's just going to be something on the side. It's not going to take over my life. I don't want it to. I just want it for, you know, the weekend and or holidays on whatever. But I did pretty good. But I just remember being at Bass Lake at Juicy's before it burnt down, and I remember sitting at this bar with this geeky guy and looking around this bar, and I'm drinking, and then it hits me, oh man, I'm getting too drunk. I need some go fast. And it was like I didn't have any connections at the time. My friend wasn't doing that. We didn't tell each other about drugs. You know, we just said, let's go to the bar, you know. And that was my first like time that I really realized, oh man, I can't drink unless I do drugs. So, you know, that's when I really consciously knew, okay, well, I guess I need to have a little bit of speed in order to not pass out and throw up and miss out on all this fun that I was having. And so it just kind of gradually took over my life, up to the point where, you know, now I'm working at a salon that I've always wanted. When I went to beauty school, I wanted to go to a really nice salon and be someone's apprentice and learn from someone really good. And you know what? My first job interview, I got this. I'm left-handed, and so there's not very many left-handed hairdressers. And I met my first interview was a left-handed hairdresser who scared the shit out of me. He looked like a fashion model. He's gay, but I fell in love with him, and he was my mentor, and he hired me right away. And I just thought, man. And it was like, I think I got hired like in July. In October, they had their 1 year anniversary party. And so we took this limousine. So I didn't really know anybody that well. And we took this limousine up to this really fancy elderberry house. And I just remember, you're not supposed to smoke at this restaurant, and I got a cigarette. And we were drinking champagne on the way up there, that's right, in the limousine. And so by the time I get there, I am like on fire. I don't remember any, and it was a really nice, you know, gourmet place. I don't remember anything. I just remember lighting up a cigarette, man, talking, and this one hairdresser, she was a pretty cool lady, but Sheila, and she would go, hey, Shane, can I have a drink? And I go, oh yeah, here. And she put it out, and so I put in a drink, probably mine. And then I did that like 3 or 4 times. So I'm totally wasted. And then I wasn't really a blackout drinker. I always remember things because I always had speed. But this night I didn't, because I was trying not to do that around people I don't know until I get to know them. And I don't hang around with anybody that doesn't do drugs. I do not trust. I don't trust anyone that doesn't party, drink, you know, have some kind of crazy side to them. I'd say because, you know, they're boring, but really, you know, I just couldn't relate. And it made me feel uncomfortable that I was doing what I'm doing. If I'm going to hang around people that are normal, that's really uncomfortable. And so I kind of passed out a little. I mean, I blacked out, because I just remember standing up in the limousine, had the moon roof on, and I'm going, and we're in fancy clothes, you know, they did my hair all really pretty, and you know, and somebody's pulling me down going, God, Shannon, or no, the limousine driver said, if you don't get her in here, I can't take you home, essentially. So yeah, someone's trying to pull me down. So anyway, I show up to work the next morning, 8:30, bright and early, and my boss, you know, he's like, you know, he was a partier too. I don't know if he was alcoholic or not, but he was pretty wild. And he just goes, "Oh, you don't look so good." Oh, and I woke up and I didn't know where I was. And I was at some girl's house. It was one of the hairdresser's house out in the country. And I was like, "How do I get to work?" And she's like, "Just go down that road." So I made it to work. And, you know, and I'm supposed to open up, answer the phone, listen to people, and be, you know, normal. Because that was my, you know, I had a normal self. And then I had the real me, the party me. And so my boss said, "Oh, here, oh, you got a hangover?" He goes, "Oh, here, have some orange juice." And he's like, and so, you know, I have some orange juice, and it hits my stomach, and it hits my stomach, and it, I made it to the bathroom, but I mean, I just, and then I could hear him laughing, you know, so he got me. He got me pretty good. But I continued to do that with that job for, so I got sober. I got sober, and they didn't fire me, but I know they were getting ready to. You know, just because I'd show up, and there's some savvy hairdressers that would just take one look at me and go, "Ugh, it's going to be one of those days," you know, kind of look like just looking at me. They knew you're not going to be able to perform. You're not going to be dependable. You're going to screw everything up, you know, and she said that all in one look, you know, and eventually everybody had that look when they saw me when I came in. So then, you know, it was like it made it harder to come in. And my drinking made it increasingly difficult to show up for work. And I always thought I had a drug problem, but that's as far as I ever got. And I had, you know, relationship problems because I always picked the wrong guy. And I didn't see alcohol as being a problem. And so when I was probably in my mid-20s, oh, and I actually became roommates with the boss from Kentucky Fried Chicken. She got a divorce. And so she became my roommate, and we were great. I mean, we partied a lot together. She'd drive, because I got pulled over one time when we were, oh my God, I can't believe, I better speed up and get sober. I got 5 minutes. So she, we were partying, and I was driving, and we were following a guy home. Oh, and we had some Long Island iced teas. Plus, we partied the night before, and you know, so this was like maybe Saturday night. And you know, and this guy, we were following him to a bar, and he made, like, he went into a turn lane, and so you know, and I didn't expect that, so I just did it really quick, and then slammed on the brakes, and then I looked in my rearview mirror, and I see a red light, and I go, "Oh, and I got pulled over." And I'd never gotten pulled over before. I had incredible luck as far as always drove drunk. Always. And I never got pulled over, and I should have. I even wrecked a car, and I didn't. And a police officer, Officer Good, pulled in, and I just did my thing. You know, I'd shake and cry, and say, "Oh my God, my boyfriend's going to kill me." And he's like, "Oh, calm down, man. You know, are you all right? Are you able to get in the car and drive?" And it was like, "I think so." And so, go home. You know, and it was like, "Whoo, man." And so this is the second time I ever got pulled over. And this guy, you know, he's young, and he was like, "Ma'am, have you been drinking? And I was like, I don't think I said anything. And I said, "Maybe one." And my friend goes, "Two." And I was like, "Oh, thanks. Making me a liar." And he was like, "Follow my finger, please." And I couldn't follow his finger because I had like three Long Island iced teas with no speed. Bad place. And then he was like, "Slap your finger, hands like just on it." And I was like, I couldn't do that. And I was like, "I'm going to jail. Oh my God, I can't go to jail." I always thought, you know, I'm a wimp. You know, I was like, "I can't go to jail." And I didn't. he goes, because my friend goes, "Officer, I live right around the corner, and we'll go there right now." And I was like, okay. And he was like, if I see you out here tonight, later on tonight, you're going to jail. Go over to her house and go to bed or whatever. And I was like, thank you, officer. Because all I could see is calling my dad. Dad, can you bail me out? But that didn't happen. I got away with it. So I, when I was about 28, you know, somehow the guy left. I got back together with him, and we were going to get married because I insisted that we get married. And so we were like engaged, and I was sitting there watching. Oh, you know what? And I always wanted to, you know, I was always writing other people's lives. You know what your problem is? Hey, this is your problem. You want some help? I got an answer for you. You know, and so this boyfriend, you know, he wasn't able to work. He'd always get a good job, look real good, he was real handsome, you know, and then everything would fall apart. He'd lose the job, and then he'd be back home like, you know, can you pay the rent? Can you feed me? And, they'd always turn into that, and it's like, okay, nightmare. And he showed up at my apartment, and he'd take off for like days at a time and then show up. And and he did that once when I told him, you know what, let's clean up our act. You know, I'm going to start exercising. And, you know, if I'm going to have kids, you know, I'm poisonous. I know I am. I need to start, you know, watching what I eat and not drink so much and exercise and all this. And it was like, and you better get with the program, buddy, because, you know, if I'm going to do it, you're going to do it. And he wasn't able to do it. Neither was I. But, you know, I tried. And I just, what I tried to do was not do drugs. I could not connect the drinking with the other stuff. And so I'm sitting at the table with Derek, and he's going, and I'm like, why can't you just get it together? God, you loser. And he's like, I'm sorry, babe, I'm sorry. He goes, I have just one beer. And he goes, and then I'm off and running. He goes, I don't know what it is. And I went, maybe your problem, it's the beer. It's the beer that's your problem. And it was like, ding. I really got like a moment of clarity, and I was like, oh shit. I didn't tell him this, you know. I just went, maybe that's my problem, you know. And I was like, off you go, you know, wedding's off, you know, damn, again. And he left, and so I tried. I was like, okay, well, you know what, I never thought about that. I never thought about not drinking. So I went for like, that was October 27th or somewhere like around now, October. And so I didn't drink. All I did is I run to work my ass off, come home and hide. Go to work, run my ass off, come home and hide. That's all, you know. And it was like, and I wasn't drinking, and so, and it was like, wow, and I wasn't doing drugs. But you know what? God, I didn't know I needed alcohol to feel okay, you know. It was like, I was just like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And that was my way of not, you know, changing my life. And and so then the boyfriend shows up like in November and says he called his boss and he's going to go to a treatment center, and would I help him, and he needs some stuff, and he needs this, he needs a ride, he needs, you know, toothbrush and stuff. And so, you know, I get all this stuff together, and I'm thinking, wow, well, good. Well, if he gets his act together, I'm not drinking. Maybe we can have, you know, that happy life. Because that was always my goal, is, you know, I didn't want much. I just wanted, you know, a family and a husband and, you know, easy life, just an easy life. And So he went to this treatment center 30 days, and then I went with him on when the family days were. But I went into an AA meeting, and they had a Cocaine Anonymous meeting too. And I'd go to there, and it was like that was my first exposure to AA, you know, in this treatment center that I didn't even belong to. I would have never gone if it hadn't been for him. And you know what? And I heard people just like me, struggling, you know, just fucking up here and left and right and not meaning to and trying, you know, and it was like, whoa, wow, this is so great. And I'm like, I hope, you know, he's hearing this too, because, you know, it sounded good. And I thought, yeah, we both can go into sobriety together and have this, like, I didn't even know what, just a new way of, you know, living. It sounded really good because I was really tired of my life, you know, really tired. And I had tried everything to change everything, and it would always bring me right back to the same thing. You know, 4 o'clock in the morning, have to go to work the next day, you know, and I was getting intolerable. And so, you know, boyfriend got out after 30 days, and we stayed sober together for, I don't know, about 9 months. And I caught him drinking, you know. I caught him drinking, and his dad's patting him on the back, and he's down in Coors, you know. That was my choice of drink, too. Coors Light, or Coors, Rocky Mountain. And, you know, healthy. And, you know, and he was drinking it. And I'm driving over the driveway, and I look, and it's just like, I just saw my whole life. It was like, oh, my God. That was harder than giving up alcohol, you know. I was going to have to let him go. And, you know, and it was like, man, I don't want to let you go. You just stay. And, you know, and it was like, okay, well, I can stay with him, and then I know what road I'm going down, you know. And it was like, God, I've already been down the road, every side road, every direction down that road. And I don't want to go back, you know. And it's like, or I can go this other way. And I don't know, it's scary, it's mysterious, and I don't want to go by myself, you know, I want to go with you. And but I chose the road without him. And you know, it was the most painful thing that I've ever done, but that was the best thing I could have ever done, because I don't think I could have stayed sober, you know, with that person in my life. And you know, and there's at this treatment center, there's this one guy who was really, oh, he was so, like, he scared me. He was sitting there, and he had this really horrible story. And while I was at the treatment center, I watched. He got a sponsor. He started doing steps, and he started making some sense. Although to the point, and I always thought, well, I have more time than him. You know, I have like 7 more months than him. And I was watching him. He passed me up, you know, as far as my judgment. It was like, he's making way more. I was still crying and, you know, ranting, or, you know, or crying if I tried to talk. It'd be like, I can't believe, and you know, just whining. Mainly just whining, because I realized in AA, you know, I'm responsible for my life. I never knew that. You know, there are so many things that I learned in AA. I was like, what? I'm responsible. And then, you know, and then I have, you know, and really, there's something greater than me. And it was like, oh my God, thank God there's something greater than me, because me ain't cutting it. You know, me is just, I just have a default of behaviors that I do. I don't know how to do. I've never been able to get out of them until I started working with, listening, getting a sponsor, you know, and working the steps as best I could. And still can't, working as best I still can, because I'm never going to stop. And wow, you know, the most unexpected things have happened in my life, you know, and I know them best. I hope I'm explaining myself okay out here to you guys. But you know, when I got sober, when I really, you know, started going to meetings and listening, and this guy, Ernie, that, you know, he was looking at me going, Shannon, are you getting a sponsor? And I'm like, you're the new guy. I got 7 more months than you. And he was like, you know, we're going to these other meetings, and maybe you'll find a sponsor. But, you know, he's helping me. And just watching him get out of that crazy, you know, his crazy eyes and his crazy talk and making sense. I mean, I think that's what really, you know, hooked me. You know, it was like, wow, watching other people go from insane to sane. I saw it with my own eyes. I didn't listen to nobody told me. Nobody, you know, I don't do that. I like experience. I listen to experience. And I get changed by experience, by your experience, AA, you know. And that's really where I started hearing my higher power. I hear through other people because that's what I believe. I believe God's in all of us. And sometimes I'm saying it to somebody else, usually, and I need to hear it, and God even speaks through me to me, you know, and hopefully I'm listening, and you know, and that's amazing to me. That is so indescribable, and I can't intellectualize it, but I know it, you know. I know truth when I hear it, and that's what I was hearing. I was hearing truth in your guys' stories and failures and triumphs and, you know, death and all that stuff that, you know, I have no coping skills for on my own. I don't. I've gotten it, you know, through meetings and, you know, and then with my sponsor, because I got to a point, I didn't want to do steps. I did 1, 2, 3. That's all I need, because I really didn't want to ask a woman. I didn't like women. You know, I was afraid of women. I had all these reasons. Women were mean to me. But really, I just didn't want anybody to tell me what to do. You know, and that's me. I want your help. Help me, but don't tell me what to do. You know, it's like, you know, I'm my own worst enemy. And so I did that. And that's about the time Ernie was saying, Shannon, do you think you might want a sponsor? And, you know, only pain. Pain is my best teacher, too. And, you know, I was in a lot of emotional pain. And because when I got sober, I started waking up, you know, to feelings and memories and stuff that I never really thought about. You know, old stuff. Like when I was, you know, before I even drank, you know, it was just memories that were painful. And so I had a pretty crazy family. And, you know, I didn't know what to do with them. I did not know what to do with them. And so that kind of drove me to get a sponsor. That, and I did finally find another guy to marry. But I did marry, unfortunately. And I'm not married to him anymore. But, you know, I did marry him. It was AA meets AA and AA, right? Boy meets girl in AA. That's what I mean. And really, he also said, God, man, you are crazy. You need a sponsor. And so I'm hearing this, you know, sponsor, you need a sponsor. And then I'm feeling like, oh, God, I feel so, you know, I out of sorts. You know, 1, 2, 3 just wasn't cutting it anymore. And so I asked a woman to sponsor me that I respected. It was very important that I find someone that had the same kind of family as me, so they'd understand me. And so I did. I found her. And but she had a real grasp of the program and steps, and I trusted her. And she was also a single mother, lawyer, and very, very busy, and that works for me. You know, no one is going to really be, you know, have a lot of time to tell me what to do. You know, that's always been my problem. But she went through, she showed me how to do step 4, because, you know, I'm not a dumb person, and I like to think of myself as fairly intelligent, but that step 4 in the big book, it was like, I couldn't do it. I don't know if I was just too emotionally charged or if I wasn't going to do it perfect enough. I'm also my defect of character. If it's not perfect, I don't do it. I either do it perfect or not at all. You know, there's no, like, do your best. And when I sat with her and I was embarrassed to show her that she's a very intelligent woman, I can't draw a straight line. I can't, you know. So she showed me how to work my fourth step and to go home and then fill it out and then bring it back to her at home, at her home that she let me in. And, you know, and I didn't know how to do it. So I thought, oh, God, you're going to be thorough or you might get drunk, you know, thorough and honest from the very start. And so I just put every single person I ever knew on that list, you know, because I really didn't know. I didn't know who I owed amends to or who I was resentful at or who I didn't want to miss anybody. And, you know, and I was like, here it is, you know, and she was like, oh, wow, it's a long list. And she helped me sort it out. I would just tell her my experience, you know, who I am, you know, and reveal myself to her. And she kind of helped me sort it out. She's like, oh, no, you don't owe those people amends. And yeah, these people, you absolutely do. And, you know, and then I told her my story. And, you know, that, I think that was my turning point for AA. I don't think that if I hadn't done that, those two vital, vital steps for me, I couldn't have stayed. It was too painful. You know, I can't even describe the pain. You know, it wasn't really anything. It was just alcoholism, you know, the ism part. That's kind of hard to understand until you're in it. It was hard for me to understand until I got in it. And so when I went home after doing that step and did, you know, 6 and 7 quietly in my house, God, I felt, like I said, walking hand in hand with your Creator. That's what I really felt like. I felt freed. You know, it was just like, and I could go to a meeting and say I did my, you know, I could be a part of it. Because, you know, I like to hide in meetings, you know. It was like, don't call on me. Or I just cried. So then I don't have to talk, you know. I'm just so distraught. Because I always thought I was one of the more emotionally sick ones. Some are sicker than others. It was like, I'm one of those. I'm one of those sicker than others. So don't expect very much from me, you know. And I cheated myself. I cheated myself. But, you know, luckily for me, you know, I was able to find someone. I was in enough pain and turned to somebody that helped me. And I'd like to say, and from that moment on, I was perfect. But I didn't. You know, I had a sponsor for about 5 years. And then I was like, okay, I got all these steps. All steps done. I can take it from here. And I didn't have a sponsor for... Am I going over time? Oh, I'm so sorry. Why didn't somebody stop me? Anyway, sorry to keep you here an extra 5 minutes. But I appreciate you letting me come here and speak with you guys. And thanks for coming here, fellow Treasure Women. Appreciate it. Would appreciate it. Thank you. All right, thanks.